Right. Well, thank you, Felicity, for this very nice and detailed and well-presented overview. I think this was exactly what we were wishing for to start this off. Well, when I also saw all these intricate designs of the experiments in the lab, I'm now thinking that I'm going to present, or together with Noemi, more like the plumber approach in the field. But well, we were going to talk about sort of monitoring catch welfare using biomarkers and posing the question whether we are helping fish and fisheries survive. So we split our presentation into two parts. So I will start off in talking about developing proxies for fish welfare at sea. And then Noemi is going to take over. It's going to talk about how we sort of monitor then fish welfare when we keep fish in aquaria on land. Well, I'm just repeating something that Felicity already mentioned in her presentation just before, the sort of welfare concept that I took from one of her papers, that basically in our work we really focus on studying the condition of a fish in its environment, or in our case, after being caught by commercial fisheries. So we are not really looking at then the perception, subjective perception of that condition of the fish, or how it sort of leads its natural life. And not just in sort of our work, but also in other works at ILVO, you know, we are really embedded in this sort of applied research context that we are trying to look at or monitor the health and diseases of fish, freshness of catches and fillets or whole fish, study gear effects on catch quality and welfare, overall, you know, documenting more sustainable fishing practices. And in all of these contexts, we have been trying to come up with some sort of indicators, biomarkers, or sort of ways to score the condition. In our context, it was dictated by the landing obligation policy, which obliges fishers to bring back to shore of quota and size regulated species any catches, also then including undersized individuals, that's juveniles, for which there's no market and they cannot sell them. So it actually induces a cost. So it is a bit considered as a perverse method to actually stimulate becoming more selective by landing them in the first place. But this has really put then, the fishers on the spot to an extent, and to make it actually feasible to implement, there were some exemption rules foreseen. And one of them is called the high survival exemption. If you can demonstrate that whatever you would like to still discard and throw back at sea survives, then you may be exempt from that landing obligation. And this is pretty much then where our work comes in, because this has then triggered a need to come up with some sort of viable proxy where you can link the at sea condition of an animal back to its post-release survival probability, in a way that you can actually use this methodology under rather wild and remote circumstances. So nothing to compare to a controlled lab environment. To come up and do this, we sort of borrowed a concept that is being coined by Michael Davis, a North American fisheries researcher, and it's called the Reflex Action Mortality Predictor Method, in short, RAMP. Which basically is based on the assumption that a fish, because of its higher vertebrate status, you know, is sensitive to various stimuli that it experiences in the capture, handling, and release phases of the sort of commercial fishing capture process. And that over a gradient of stress, you will see some sort of impaired or impairment of movements, or also an increase in the amount of visible injury, and that these can, an increase in the impairment and injury can also be linked than to its survival probability after release. And we do this work basically in two phases, that we do this kind of vitality assessments at sea, where we score then the presence and absence of reflex movements and or the presence of injury. That's what we call the vitality at sea assessment. And then a fraction of fish we actually retain and bring back to the lab or aquaria, where we then monitor their post-release fate, so whether they survive. And then ideally, if your underlying assumption sort of works, you would like to see these kind of relationships that you can correlate your degree of impairment or and/or injury to the mortality probability. You see in the figure on the left-hand side, that's borrowed from one of Michael's papers, that there's also a species-specific sort of relationship that for salmon, for example, a small increment in impairment of your impairment index on the x-axis is then actually correlated to a larger, steeper increase in your mortality probability, whereas for halibut, that sort of slope is not as steep. And then another figure that we had produced from our work, where we looked at the survival probability of discarded plates. And this is like a survival, a tracing survival over time for groups of fish at different impairment states. So you can see that those fish that were least impaired, that's the red and the orange line at the top, have a very high chance to survive over time when we keep them in the aquaria. Whereas fish, the green lines at the bottom that were really highly impaired, also didn't survive much longer. Okay. Well, and to make sure, I think that we wanted to establish that we had really a link in that impairment and survival relationship, and we're not really assessing how good or bad actually different raters are able to interpret the scoring criteria of these sort of presence-absence criteria. We did some ancillary studies into the inter-observer variability and also studied the expectation bias, because most of this work is a non-blinded experiment, so most of the raters would know what kind of treatment the fish had actually received, and we wanted to see whether this affected then their ability to produce the same score. We were also interested to see whether temperature actually has an effect on rating the impairment, you know, whether there's just the ambient temperature when you do these vitality tests actually has an effect on whether they show in response to a stimulus or not. In all, this is just in a nutshell from this work, that there's little evidence that it actually impacts the impairment and or the ability of different raters to produce a similar score. And it also doesn't, if there is variability, it doesn't affect then the relationship with your post-release survival probability.
Okay, thank you, Sebastian. So in this part of the presentation, we'll take a closer look at monitoring fish welfare. So this is the same figure that Sebastian showed. So now we're going to look at the second part in the figure where we're, after scoring fish on board, taking a subset of these fish to our aquaria and then monitor them in captivity for usually between 10 or 20 days to then calculate discard mortality and final survival. So first I'll show you the procedure that we follow at ILVO for any typical laboratory fish experiment. Before we start, we, just like everybody else, need to write an application form for the ethical committee. And we have to motivate why we're using live fish and how we are complying with the 3R principle: refinement, replacement, reduction. If we conclude that live fish are really necessary, then we need to calculate the lowest number of individuals that can answer the scientific question. And this is usually done by a pilot study combined with a statistical power analysis. In the application form, we also need to state who is in charge of the scientific experiment, and this needs to be a certified experimental leader for LASA Category C, somebody who has followed the 80-hour training course and passed the exam. Next, besides the application form itself, we also need to include a non-technical summary. This is required since the EU directive of 2010/63, and the intention of this is to inform the broader public on our experiment. And then finally, at ILVO, we often have to also apply for a derogation to catch fish in the wild. And this is simply because we're working with species that are currently often not being bred or not available anywhere else than in the sea. During the prep phase of these experiments, we see that scientists are often faced with the problem of insufficient guidelines on holding conditions for the specific species they're working with. And they then resort to the available scientific literature, or they contact other researchers or aquaria who are working with similar species for advice. Two really important things to think about are, of course, environmental enrichment options and what type and how much food you will be giving to your individuals. For the environmental enrichment question, it's really thinking about what does the fish need to express its full range of natural behaviors, and what can we provide? In the case, for instance, of rays, you can see here on the left, it's really important to have a lot of surface in the tank and sediment so that the ray can bury themselves in the sediment. This is just a small example of what you could do. And then during the experiment, it's of course vital to monitor the animals frequently on a daily basis or more. And besides monitoring the fish, you also need to monitor the physical water parameters. Fish is very much dependent of its environment, so you need to keep those parameters within acceptable ranges throughout the experiment. And you need to log any fluctuations that are happening and keep it all in a digitalized way, so it's available for easy inspection by controlling officers, which are usually vets. So this is the process. To give you a little example of a detailed monetary study that was done this year, this is a thesis report by Laura and Rens, who are here in the room and who will be presenting their poster during the lunch session later. They looked at some health and behavioral parameters of rays, and I'm just giving a few examples here. For instance, feeding behavior, swimming, burying in the sand, respiration rate. And they measured these different parameters on a daily basis as presence or absence, 0, 1. And with these scores, they produced a general health score on an individual level that they, as you can see in this graph, plotted against time to have an idea of how well a fish is doing in captivity. And this is, of course, with test rays and control acclimatized rays. So very interesting study, more information in the poster session. And then to conclude this presentation, as Sebastian already pointed out, these results are extensively being used to feed discussions on an eel level about the future sustainable management of fisheries. In a sincere hope that both the fish and the fisheries survive. Thank you for your attention.